Russell in Carmel, California. This is Friday, January the 5th, 1979, and this is tape number 370, side one. This tape today is going to be about the House Select Committee on Assassinations, and particularly the difference between myself and the other researchers, the researchers from the Assassination Information Bureau in Washington, and the various researchers that they interviewed after the House Select Committee finished their hearings. Before I get into the particular researchers and the difference between my work and theirs, I do want to make a comment about Richardson Pryor, the drug king from the House Select Committee, the multimillionaire representative from the Sterling Drug Company, the maker of flu vaccine for Gerald Ford and thalidomide for newborn babies. Richardson Pryor was the spokesman for the House Select Committee. I guess they used him as the mouthpiece when they completed their work because he's the judge, and here comes the judge who would question the judge, Richardson Pryor. And he had a press conference. UPI covered this story, and he made several comments that I would like to answer to. He said the Justice Department should pay particular attention to the anti-Castro Cubans and the crime syndicate members, that if they follow up in any leads the House Committee had, this is the area to look at. And he said if they follow the investigation of the murder of President Kennedy, they should go into those areas. Now, we already know from Senator Church's investigation that the organized crime members get immunity from the Justice Department. The Justice Department has given immunity to Lucky Luciano until his death from 1923. Until his death, he was immune from prosecutions. He went to jail for a short time and then was released to go to Italy to become the narcotics chief and responsible for a large deal of the heroin and serious drugs that came into this country after he was deported. The Justice Department has given favors to chemical companies such as IG Farben and various Nazi organizations, and they have worked hand in hand with murders such as the Kent State and the Orangeburg Massacre and various areas that we researchers have had to break into. They've covered up layers and layers of information and hard facts. So it's a contradiction to think that the Justice Department would look into the crime syndicate at this point or the anti-Castro Cubans when both members of those branches are incorporated into the Central Intelligence Agency and therefore, for security reasons, can never be investigated. The biggest smokescreen, of course, of the entire investigation that I've said all along are the links to Walter Dornberger, Albert Osborne, George de Morenchild, John Connolly, the Nazi connections. Richardson Pryor said the committee didn't find a scintilla of evidence linking the Secret Service, the CIA, or the FBI to a conspiracy, and we also believe the anti-Castro Cubans and the National Syndicate of Organized Crime were not involved. On the one hand, he says, go into the Justice Department and look into the Cubans and the syndicate, but he wants to narrow it down to a few individuals and not large groups of people with collusion of the federal government. The committee didn't find any evidence of Secret Service, FBI, or CIA conspiracy, according to Richardson Pryor, but on the other hand, the staff was selected entirely by the CIA and FBI, and they approved of every person who testified and everybody who worked for them. G. Robert Blakey was the common denominator between the CIA, the FBI, the Justice Department, and organized crime, and he kept a staff that eliminated making the connections. It's true they didn't find the evidence, but they kept it out. They didn't call Robert Mayhew as a witness, even though he set up assassination teams and was the bonding between the CIA and organized crime in 1960. It was going on much longer with Thomas Dewey and the New York Mafia organized crime members, but in 1960, the big assassination teams got formed when Mayhew met in New York City and combined these people for the series or the era of assassinations that we're feeling right now. Richardson Pryor said, our committee does not preclude that individual members of organized crime or anti-Castro Cubans were involved. And again, I give you the layers of the cover-up. Richardson Pryor, the House Select Committee, and the people I'm going to refer to in the rest of this tape are the next layer of cover-up. They differ totally from Mae Brussels from where she stands, and I think it's important for you to have this tape as these news stories break so you have some way to gauge how far they're willing to go and how much they're holding the line. Of course, the original Warren Commission said Oswald did it alone. That was the first story. Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone, and that held for 15 years. The next story to try to cover up would be a KGB, USSR, Lee Harvey Oswald conspiracy and throw in the Oswald doubles that he was switched in Minsk, and that wasn't Oswald, it was a different person, that Russia was behind the assassination. The next line was that Fidel Castro ordered it as retaliation for wanting to kill him or invade Cuba. The fourth layer of cover-up was organized crime. Individual members of mafia and organized crime were in this avenging John Kennedy for taking over the gambling houses in Cuba, or for Robert Kennedy wanting to prosecute Jimmy Hoffa, putting him in jail, and for excommunicating Carlos Marcellus, who came back to this country, and the anti-Castro Cubans, a revenge for the Bay of Pigs. Now, those are the layers going up. That's about as far as they've gotten now. And, of course, the next area to investigate where they leave off, that maybe will take 15 more years and maybe it won't, maybe we don't have that much time anymore, would be the Mayhew connections to the subjects listed below, the CIA connections and the Defense Department connections and the Division 5 of the FBI to the anti-Castro Cubans, the organized crime, and so forth, and then trying to take the evidence and shift it around to make it look like the Russians and Cubans did it, and then show that Lee Harvey Oswald not only didn't do it alone, but that he didn't do it at all. That is the part that is covered up by the various researchers and the connecting links, the links that go above what the stated intent was of Richardson Pryor, to say that single people from organized crime or single anti-Castro Cubans may have gone astray and then later find that those particular ones are dead and therefore we can't do anything, was as much as they could get out of this committee. And the various people that have been called upon to give opinions stay at the very lowest, most unsophisticated and unintelligent level, that in order that these layers continue to cover up. The cover-up went on. It started in Boston in 1975 when they had a conference there, and various researchers then began to set up. Mark Lane set his offices up in Washington, D.C., and through elimination process of one person after the other, each equally bad, they got Robert Blakey, who wrote the Senate Crime Bill number 1 for Richard Nixon, that gentleman from the Justice Department, to head this investigation. The Assassination Information Bureau that set up the hearings in Boston moved to Washington, D.C., and set up their offices during the hearings, and they got out a newsletter. I gave you the address last week, Clandestine America. And they had, after the committee hearings were over, they had interviews with 7 of the critics. They described them as 7 of the most active critics who were chosen for interviews. And, of course, I could name 6 others plus myself that could fill in these questions, and that's what I'm going to do with you now. I'm going to show you how they answered the questions of AIB and how I would have answered them. I'll give you the names of the people in case you don't have their bulletin or didn't order it. One is Jerry Polakoff. His claim to fame is writing an article on how the New York Times distorted or eliminated information on the assassination of John Kennedy. That's his expertise, is the New York Times. His understanding of history is nilch. I know Jerry Polakoff. I met him in New York. He was out here at the house on a trip once. He stayed here for about an hour or so and left. He is, I think, as a researcher, empty-headed, shallow, but he's a good mouthpiece. He's written a few articles for New Times, Rolling Stones, and he put his article in The Realist on the Warren Commission and the New York Times. The second critic they interviewed was David Lifton. David has a publisher now. He has a book coming out. He's been working on it 14 years. I know David better than all of these other researchers personally because he helped write the first article in Ramparts on the Kennedy assassination, and I had done a section of that article. And David and I have had differences of opinion on the research. We don't see eye to eye on a lot of the material. He holds the line, definitely holds the line, with all kinds of excuses and apologies. But he did two monumental things. He did publish the book, the document addendum to the Warren Report, with the minutes of the meetings of the Warren Commission, which is one of the most valuable books in my library. Or if any of you have it, you would agree that it is extremely valuable. And that is the book that tells how the Warren Commission covers up through their own words and also how they plan to cremate that body. It was Lee Harvey Oswald's before they ever started the meetings. A very valuable book. And then when David was doing his work in the National Archives, he microfilmed very early hundreds of pages, it runs into the thousands for me, of information in the area that I was concerned in. He was working on the motorcade, and I was working on the White Russian community and Lee Harvey Oswald. And he got for me documents which I know later many must have been destroyed because I don't know anybody else who has them. And I got a letter from David. He'll be out here soon, and he'll come up the house, and we'll visit. And he does have a publisher. The third person that's interviewed here is Sylvia Marr. She wrote Accessories After the Fact. I've always criticized Sylvia because she did the subject index of the Warren Commission with the various people interviewed and left out every link to the Nazi connections to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, to the Young Americans for Freedom. And the conspiratorial links were cut off, and all those names were eliminated. And then she held the line that with what she did, just certain pieces of evidence and fact, which were excellent. Her book, Accessories After the Fact, is excellent. But it's like having a child learn a basic primer and then taking a test, a Stanford entrance test, and expecting to get in. The very important ingredients that would divulge the whole story are eliminated. And after that point, she said, I just stopped doing work. I met her in New York, and she tells people Mae Russell is crazy. She told me she never heard of the Torba document. I offered to give it to her. She said, I'm not doing research anymore. Yet she advised the House Select Committee. She said she may go back to doing some writing. She's retired from the United Nations now where she worked. So she is active, but she refuses to hold the Torba document or read it or to learn anything other than to stick with the General Walker shooting or certain stories about Marina Oswald and certain details that came out very early after the assassination. She keeps reiterating those, which is all right. But it's like going up the rings of a ladder. If you want to get to the top, to change that light bulb or do whatever you're going to do, you can't stay on the second ring if it's way up high. You've simply got to go on up to get to your goal. And if you stay there too long, 15 or 20 or 30 years, then you know something is wrong. Harold Weisberg is a good researcher. He sticks with facts. He denies there was a conspiracy at Watergate. He'll tell you Dorothy Hunt wasn't working with E. Howard Hunt, that there was no conspiracy to get Nixon out. He discredits many of the researchers, such as Sherman Skolnick. He puts them down. He is very cantankerous, and right now he's under salary to the Justice Department. He was in the OSS, I believe the FBI. He's under salary of the Justice Department, and again, when you get up that ladder, I don't want to detract from his work, and I'll be specific in their answers, but in my opinion, each one of these people has been treading water instead of swimming. They've stayed at a certain place, and where they've stayed is very basic. They're not sinking, but they're not getting across, and that's the main thing, is to get the answers. Paul Hawk works for the Defense Department. He's a physicist at the Lawrence Lab up in Berkeley. He has taken on the role of a assassination investigator, and he's Defense Department all the way, in spite of the fact that he gave one answer that I do agree with in his questionnaire. I have never trusted Paul Hawk from the day that I was informed that he was keeping dossiers on me, and I called him and asked him if he ever met me, and he hadn't. Have you ever been to the house, seen the research? No, he hadn't. Then why is it your business to keep dossiers on me? He's as much of a spy as an investigator, and I didn't appreciate the fact that he works for the Defense Department and carries the cloak of the investigator and the authority with him. Bernard Fensterwald's worked with the CIA all of his life. He's been exposed over and over again as part of the CIA. He put in this House Select Committee with Robert Blakey. He was down in New Orleans at the time Jim Garrison was working, arrested Clay Shaw. He's made no major breakthrough. His book is excellent. He has a very good book, Fensterwald, called Coincidence or Conspiracy. He leaves it open, but again, we're going up the rings of the ladder, and when it's through, you have a lot of biographies about a lot of individual people, but you can't make connections of how this thing came down and who's covering it up. And then Carl Oglesby, Penn Jones has said that he's been in the G2, the Army Intelligence, for years. He's famous for his Yankee and Cowboy War story and conspiracies from Dallas to Watergate. Carl Oglesby and Fensterwald and Hawk and Weisberg and Marr and Lifton and Polakoff do a job, only do a point, and they sat in Washington and they did meet with members of the House Select Committee, but the committee is at point zero, maybe it's a little farther ahead than the Warren Commission, but not more, much more, considering it's been 15 years. The AIB, the Assassination Information Bureau, asked questions of these various researchers, now that I've given my opinion of them or background, and I'm going to run through very quickly the questions that they asked them, these answers, and then what my answer would be if they asked me to reflect on the assassination hearings. The first question is, what new evidence did the House Select Committee develop during the public hearings? Jerry Polakoff said, we saw a lot of new evidence with the way the CIA proceeded, and we saw a lot on the background of Jack Ruby. For the first time, we got medical experts to substantiate that the back wounds on JFK were lower than the autopsy report. There wasn't anything earth-shaking. If it was, it was lost to me. David Lifton said the most important new evidence was the artist's drawing of the autopsy photographs and x-rays of John Kennedy's body. Jerry Polakoff talks about the way the CIA proceeded, but he doesn't get specific at all in how that would tell us any more about the assassination. And as far as the background of Jack Ruby, they only went into his links to organized crime and very superficially and eliminated his links to the CIA and the FBI and specific people by name. The medical experts, as far as the wounds go, it doesn't really matter to me if the wounds are 12 inches up or 12 inches lower, if Lee Harvey Oswald didn't fire a gun, and if there were doubles in the Texas School Book Depository, I don't think it matters 15 years later exactly where the wounds were, because we don't know where the shots came from, and we don't know who shot the weapons. As I say, David Lifton thought the most important and dramatic new evidence was the artist's drawing of the autopsy photographs and x-rays, and I thought that was absolutely obscene. At this late date, we can see x-rays of John Connolly's body, but we can't see x-rays of John Kennedy's body. And at this late date, we can't see the photograph of a bullet hole in a man's head, but we can see it every day in the newspapers and on evening television, and it isn't obscene at all. So they get a third person in to draw every minute hair that cost $10,000 for the drawing, and we still don't get the first person piece of evidence to see ourselves. Sylvia Marr said the acoustical evidence was the most important. Now, I'll be referring to that a lot because that was the tape of the Dallas policeman of four shots fired at Dealey Plaza. She said the neutron activation analysis was certainly important, although it needs thorough evaluation. The confirmation of the human figure behind the retaining wall in the Willis picture. The Nosenko story was quite shattering. The discovery that 37 documents from Oswald's CIA file were missing, and the fact that Judge Griffin doesn't believe now that Jack Ruby came in through the Main Street ramp, that he entered the Dallas jail when he killed Lee Harvey Oswald by another means. Now, as far as the acoustical evidence, she says that was the most important, and it probably was because it shows that more than one person was firing a weapon that day. The neutron activation was certainly important. I don't know what Sylvia Marr means by the neutron being important. I think it was the most disgusting single piece of evidence that I saw that was proved without any doubt a huge conspiracy because, as I said, on tape number 358, you have that one, October 13th, 1978. I have given you the difference of the weights and bullets that were tested by this committee, and the bullets tested, the John Kennedy bullets that were tested in 78, were different than the bullets tested in 1964, and the bullets from John Connolly that were tested in 1968 were a different weight than the bullets tested in 1964. So I can't possibly imagine why the neutron activation analysis was important. The figure on the wall behind the retaining wall is a new piece of information that was made public. It was confirmed that this could be a person with a rifle. And I think that the fact that Ruby didn't come down the Main Street ramp was a very interesting thing to talk about. But then where did he come from, and why didn't they call the Dallas police in to talk about it? Now, Harold Weisberg was asked, what new evidence did they develop? And he said, I don't think they did anything right. It was the American equivalent of a show trial. They took preconceptions and did what they could to make them appear reasonable. It was an updated version of the Warren report. Now, Harold Weisberg is right, his analysis is right, but by not being specific about what they did, such as the bullet fragments and so forth, we're still back with the Warren report. He doesn't give out any new information, he just says they didn't do anything right. Paul Hawk said, I think the scientific tests provided a lot of generally important new data. I want to see the final report. I thought the weight of it was quite persuasive. I don't want to give specifics yet. Mae Bressel thinks the scientific tests were crap. I think they should have called in the other experts. Fred Newcomb, who took the analysis and overlays of the pictures of Lee Harvey Oswald in the backyard holding the rifle. I think they should have duplicated those shots with the shadows coming from the back, the rifle shadows going to the back, and the nose shadows going straight down. I don't think they satisfied me, at least, with those tests. I don't think their bullet tests were accurate, and I think they should have been exposed for that. I think the scientific work was pathetic. They relied on the fact that bullet 399 could do all of the shots for John Kennedy and John Connally because they tested it through an animal. The same man and the same military base, the same people tested, or so-called tested, in 1978, that bullet 399 that they did in 1964. I think the scientific tests were crappy, and I think Paul Hawk is crappy, and I don't think they gave any important new data through their scientific tests. The only thing they did was to come up with this, the scientific test of the four shots, but they've known that for 15 years. They've had this tape, and they've known it for 15 years, and they waited till the last day that they were closing and presented it and said, oh, whoops, we have a conspiracy. Give it to the Justice Department. I know that there were many areas that they could have proved a conspiracy much, much earlier, so I don't think their scientific tests were persuasive. They didn't test the inside of the car. They said that they called Dearborn, Michigan, and an officer up there told them there were no bullets in the car. Well, obviously there aren't. It was written by Lyndon Johnson and Gerald Ford. But they didn't rip out those seats. They didn't take any ballistic expert to rip out the whole body of the car and look inside the metal part of the back where these bullets were supposed to have hit from them, gone into the car. The scientific evidence, as far as I'm concerned, was crap. Bernard Fensterwall said, some of the testimony points clearly to at least two riflemen in Dealey Plaza. I thought the testimony of the audio experts as to four shots and groupings was the most important single piece of information. It makes believable the scenario of two gunmen, each firing from two positions, and I would suspect one came from a lower floor of the depository and the other corner of the building, which again leaves you wide open with nothing particular. Back 15 years ago, I think that by November 24th, 1963, many people said there were two riflemen at various positions in the school book depository and a belief that there were two or more gunmen. Carl Oglesby said the committee established that Oswald was in contact with Carlos Marcello mob during his stay in New Orleans in 1963 through David Ferry, and the committee acknowledged that Jack Ruby was an organized crime member. Now that goes back to what I say is the level of cover-up numbers 4 and 5 on that pyramid. If you go up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and I want to get up to 6, 7, and then 8 as the very final answers, they're at organized crime and anti-Castro Cubans, which is the cutoff right there. He leaves out the fact that, sure, Lee Harvey Oswald met with David Ferry And Ferry worked with Carlos Marcellus, but David Ferry also worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. Lee Harvey Oswald met with Ferry and Marcello, but Lee Harvey Oswald also worked for the FBI and the CIA. Robert Mayhew and Guy Bannister of the FBI that worked together, FBI and CIA in Chicago, split. Bannister opened an office down there in New Orleans that backed up to Lee Harvey Oswald's office, and Robert Mayhew had hired the assassination teams that used organized crime in the CIA. They left out Robert Mayhew, going up the ladder again to that next step. Carlos Marcello, Rosselli, Giacano, Jack Ruby also all worked for the FBI and the CIA. And Charles Oglesby says, the committee established Oswald contacted Marcello, but it does not go into the context of Lee Harvey Oswald with the Central Intelligence Agency. Albert Osborne from the Defense Intelligence Agency went down to Mexico with Lee Harvey Oswald. A man named Osborne picked up the pro-Castro Cuban pamphlets that Lee Harvey Oswald was passing out, and the FBI man was called to release him when he was arrested that night. All he did was call the FBI and get out of jail. The committee did not go into the FBI man who was called to release Lee Harvey Oswald, or Ferry's CIA connections, or Robert Mayhew and Guy Bannister and Lee Harvey Oswald, FBI and CIA connections. And they leave out the fact that Jack Ruby was with Connie Trammell of the CIA, of the Republic National Bank, that did killing for the CIA with black bag, black money. They leave out Jack Ruby's connections to H.L. Hunt, the oil people, the Central Intelligence Agency, Jack Ruby's connections to Earlene Roberts, the woman who ran the rooming house where Lee Harvey Oswald stayed. It was her sister, Bertha Cheek, who was giving Ruby a large sum of money, I believe it was $17,000, 3 weeks before the assassinations, and Jack Ruby's connections to Warren Carroll of the CIA. Carl Oglesby comes through, and the AIB come through in their interviews, because what he says was the most important evidence that they developed was that Oswald was in contact with Marcello in New Orleans through the mob and David Ferry, and that Jack Ruby worked with organized crime. And I want to repeat again, and you get up, when you go away from Oswald did it alone, to the KGB did it, to Castro did it, then the next is organized crime, and the next is anti-Castro Cuban. Then you make that big leap into the Defense Intelligence Agency, Division 5 of the FBI. Then you get to the Spider or the Nazi connections to Bormann, DeMaurinschild, the world Nazi organizations, and then you're at the top. Incidentally, not to digress too far from this because we've got a lot of material to cover. If you saw the news this week, there were two things in the news that make me think of how this assassination research is going and why Kennedy was killed and where it's leading. The news event, if you saw the streets of Beverly Hills with the riots and fires at the home of the Shah of Iran's mother, and the street scene, the hills burning there, and then you read that General Haig is retiring from the Army and he wants to run for President of the United States, your lines are going to be clearly delineated. Either you will be fighting in the streets or you will have General Haig, the top dog, the top Nazi dog for Kissinger and Brzezinski, as President of the United States. And you better get to that bottom line because your choices are narrowing. It's 15 years later. And if you don't make a reasonable effort to change the system and expose these people who are still covering up and take the guts to expose them on radio talk shows, in person, write AIB, confront these people with this cover-up, then you're part of the cover-up. Too many people have sat back and listened to Mark Lane and wouldn't pay attention to what I said, that he was a part of this cover-up from the word go, and I certainly knew it from 1967 on, but they wanted to believe in Lane, and it's gone on now, and these people are doing the same thing right down the line. These names that I listed to you are doing the same cover-up, and as I say, I sincerely believe that in a few years from now, you're either going to see more demonstrations and the American cities burning, because that will be the only alternative, or you'll have General Haig as your president. We're going to that point, and they're working up the ladder, and either you're going to make these changes by exposing these cover-up bastards now, or it's going to be too late. To sum up what they saw as new evidence, I listed what these major researchers thought was good evidence. They saw the way the CIA proceeded without saying a thing about the CIA. They saw new evidence of Jack Ruby without any connections of Ruby to the intelligence community or the assassination teams of the Mayhew higher order, Warren Carroll, H.L. Hunt gang, the oil millionaires. They saw an autopsy wound of Kennedy go lower than the original. So what? They still say Lee Harvey Oswald did all the shots. They saw a drawing of an autopsy x-ray which was never seen before. So what? Why can't we see the original? The acoustical evidence is important. The neutron activation analysis of bullets was crap. The confirmation of figure behind the wall was good. But what about that person? The Yuri Nosenko KGB defector that was mentioned by Sylvia Marr is not developed. And I think Nosenko was the man in the KGB that made the arrangements for Lee Harvey Oswald at the Minsk Radio Factory. And we can go into that some more later. But it wasn't important just to name him as being interesting unless you say why he's interesting. The fact that Oswald's CIA files are missing is an obvious statement. This is the way we're going to cover this thing, and we're not going into it. They didn't cover how Jack Ruby really got into the Dallas jail to kill Lee Harvey Oswald. The scientific tests that Paul Hawk talks about were crappy. And the fact that Oswald met with the mob is not as important as that the mob met with the CIA and Oswald was the CIA and they all worked with the Federal Bureau of Investigations. I don't accept Harold Weisberg's just saying it's like the Warren Commission. I think that he could ask for Robert Blakey to be prosecuted for covering up evidence. Their cover-up is still going on, and it's going on the part of these researchers.